seen the imagery that captured our interest, and we were ready to talk about it. We'll start adding that qualifier in. yeah, so it's movies, TV, DVDs, things of that nature. Not a whole lot happened for me last week. I didn't see anything new in the theater. Not much TV. I mean, the big film that opened was Prince Caspian for Narnia.
Yeah.
And I read a headline on Dark Horizons a minute ago that said that it was a softer opening than expected.
Yeah.
But I didn't read the whole story. And to me, the media on, there's been a lot of commercials for it and this stuff I watch. I've seen a lot of ads for this thing, and I just don't care. I watched the first one, and I didn't care a whit about it.
I haven't seen hardly anything. I just noticed a review that was coming out. It's weird. I remember it was going to be the big... it was going to be the big sort of let's follow the Harry Potter model to make money off of this kind of series of books. But what's interesting is didn't the first one come out like 3 years ago or something, or 2.5 years ago? Because Harry Potter, they did their best, although it didn't quite work out, to try and chug those out almost once every year because these kids were going to get old pretty quick. But it sure took them a long time to come up with this second one. I don't know how they're possibly going to film all these unless they're assuming the kids will be like adults when they're filming their final ones.
I don't know. Yeah, I haven't heard anything about that contingency, if you will.
I finally did see the first one, I think, on HBO or something. It did nothing for me. It wasn't bad. It did nothing for me. I'm completely oblivious to the whole Christian theme. I guess you have to know what everything means, but it meant nothing to me. But it just wasn't anything great, anything bad. So,
well, yeah, I read the books when I was a kid, and I didn't realize it. I'm sure if I read them again now, looking for the whole Aslan the Lion is God, and
yeah,
really, that's all I know.
or Jesus, that's all I know either. And from what I understand, you don't really, if you know it, great. If you don't, it makes no difference, but
that was my friends had that DVD and I borrowed it, and I think I watched that during my kidney stone removal recovery week.
Oh God!
So I wasn't really well disposed in that situation to liking it, but even so, it just sat there. It wasn't horrible. It just kind of sat there. Yeah. It was just completely unengaging to me.
Yeah, same here. That's what I thought.
I mean, I don't know if I was a kid, if I would have enjoyed it more. I was suffering from overexposure to, to the genre from Lord of the Rings and, I don't want to say Harry Potter, but I guess it's kind of in the same thing.
Well, kind of fantasy realm, but yeah.
I mean, to me, it's, if a film is good, a film is good. It doesn't matter if it's in a genre that has had a lot of activity lately, but so I don't think that was it. But yeah, it just sat there and I just didn't care, and I really, really don't care about this one, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just find it interesting when, there's a film they're really trying to push mass market, and it has no effect on
me.
Yeah,
that's me.
Because there are times when that happens, when I do feel that instinctual, I have to see that. Even if it's not, even if it doesn't look like a good film, if it's just like everyone's talking about it, I do feel that urge.
Yeah.
But not at all the case with this. have you seen anything?
No, I've been so friggin' busy. Nothing I've seen since Iron Man last week.
I do want to see Speed Racer, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to it before it drops out of the theaters.
Which might be like next week at this rate.
Yeah, it's, I feel bad for it because apparently, it's visually very interesting and they were really trying to do something innovative visually. And even if it doesn't work as a movie or the story is bad or whatever, I have to respect people trying to do something new. and push, you know, push some boundaries. And
I did read an interesting review of it where, it was some kind of thing where some guy was writing an article about the backlash, saying, what is the deal with the critics all calling this thing the worst thing ever? He says, you know, I went to it. I wasn't aware of the critics. And a bunch of my friends, we all went to it. And after it was over, we loved it. And then we read these reviews and couldn't believe the venom and the vitriol. It just seemed, you know how every once in a while a movie will be designed to get horrible reviews, and they won't give it any benefit of the doubt, and everybody's got it out for the movie, and it seems like this was that movie.
Yeah, it's a shame. It does look interesting, and I would like to see it, but we're coming up on Indy next week, so yeah, the odds of my being able to see it before that train gets rolling.
So here's the numbers. Prince Caspian made $56 million this weekend. And Iron Man still made $30 million last week. And Iron Man's in 3 weeks has made $222 million domestic. That's pretty amazing.
Jon Favreau was on The Treatment last week.
Yeah, I saw that. I haven't listened to it yet.
Pretty good interview. He's really good. He's very much, and it sounds like it was a post opening weekend recording. It wasn't done 4 weeks ago. And they're talking about the success of the film, and he's really giving it up to everybody and saying, a lot of people worked hard to make this what it was, and because of a number of factors, it's really doing well. And he says, you know what? And there's also just a big component of luck to it.
Yeah.
It struck me as like a really, what I want to, not what I want to hear from every director, but his attitude of going into it struck me as really cool. And not like, oh, this is because I rock and I did this and I did that and that's why this film is great.
Yeah,
he's very much saying it's a team effort. There's luck involved. People are digging it at the right time. I'm happy everyone's enjoying it.
Yeah, he was. I heard he called in Howard Stern this week, and he talked about, that these movies and what a juggernaut they are. And there's a lot you can bring to it, but a lot is there's more to these movies that is out of your control. It's like this juggernaut of expectations and how a character has to develop. But he definitely made it his own.
He also brought up a really good point, which I think I had seen alluded to before, but I hadn't really focused on, and that's that even though Iron Man's not, as big a character as high profile as Spider-Man or the X-Men, a lot of people do know of Iron Man and know of the suit, and they recognize the suit if they saw it. They've heard of Iron Man, but the story, it's not the case with the story. They can't really name one Iron Man story, except maybe the fact that he was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
His bad guys that he faces, really you can think of one, and that's the Mandarin, which is obviously not something you want to bring to the screen. And so it came in with this sort of built-in type of familiarity. So people know the character, but they don't really know much about him or expect to see certain situations or characters. They just, and he brought that up and said it really gave you a lot of freedom over how to treat it. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. And that is somewhat unique to that character, because Batman, a lot of people know, people kind of know the Iron Man origin of sort of Vietnam era, and he built the suit to keep him alive. But a lot more people know about Batman and his parents.
I'll tell you, dude. Here's where I'd come from, and I would consider myself, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I consider myself not a comic book person at all, but pretty with it culturally. So there's a lot of references I'm going to get, and then some not. With Batman, and a lot of this, and this predated, the Michael Keaton movies. I knew Batman. I knew that he did not have any special powers other than his own brain, so he wasn't like, didn't have any superpowers. I knew about the Joker. I knew a lot about from the old Batman TV series, not much from the comics. Iron Man, I had no idea whatsoever. None, you're saying, you know, a lot of people know about him being alcoholic. I barely knew there was a character called Iron Man, barely at all. So 100% of it was new to me. What you're describing to me is maybe a casual comic fan, but this is maybe a fallacy, but I got to assume most people are like me, that they literally had no idea who Iron Man was. I absolutely had no idea, or had very vague idea. And I would assume.
You're probably right. I guess I was just saying, if you know anything about Iron Man at all, it's that maybe it was sort of, he built the suit to keep him alive, and there was an alcoholic theme that's, you know, kind of gone up and down over the years.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's about it. So even if you know something about Iron Man, that's all you're going to know.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, most people probably don't even know that. So.
Well, which is great, because it gave him the freedom to, you know, to kind of explore it or whatever. You know, I can't remember what it was. Some magazine, maybe it was Cracked or something, had their list of all the things that have to be in comic book movies. And it was like, you know, in the sequel, they always have to go after two villains, and in the first movie always has this belabored origin story. Now this had an origin story, but honest to God, it was the most engaging origin story. So many of those, it just takes forever to get through them, because they have to start as a child and they have to do this and that. And this here, you know, it was so part of the thing. It just worked so beautifully. So it followed a lot of those comic book movie conventions, but it just didn't drag you down like so many of them were, you know. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was just about perfect. It was, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, yep, I think that's definitely my favorite comic book movie ever. It's truly a great movie. To the point that I almost thought, you know, if I was looking to go see a movie again, it would not stop me in a whit to go see it again in a theater, and that rarely happens.
Have you seen the? I was just poking around. I've had friends in town for most of last week, so I've been. That's one of the reasons I'm not as into things. But I did manage yesterday to see the new rated R trailer for Tropic Thunder.
No, I can't remember if I've seen that before, but I saw an ad where they mentioned go. It's weird to watch an ad on TV that implores you to go see the rated R trailer. It's weird. I'm watching
really?
An ad, and then it says go online and watch the restricted trailer with you know, uncensored content or whatever. So no, I haven't seen it, but I'm trying to think if maybe I've seen it before. If it's been around, I every once in a while I'll see something like that, so I may have seen it before.
I don't think it's been
okay,
around.
Okay, then I haven't.
It is pretty funny, and the movie itself does look pretty funny. This is the first time I've seen a trailer for it, even though I'd heard about it before. And it does look pretty funny.
Yeah, it does. Ben Stiller's movies, I'm really usually, I don't really like them that much, but this one looks pretty funny, and Robert Downey Jr. looks funny.
Yeah. And you're right, the concept of the Red Band trailer itself is pretty rare. I could think of probably five since I've been paying attention that I could think of.
Well, I mean, I like what they're doing. It was weird to see an ad advertising a Red Band trailer. It's weird. It was on, I think, Comedy Central or something. Or maybe it was on Saturday Night Live last night. I call it, the All John McCain Show.
I haven't watched SNL in forever.
Prepare to see. Oh, I thought if you TiVo'd it. Yeah, prepare to see John McCain three times.
Well, that's.
Well, I mean, I they can show whoever they want. John McCain definitely has a sense of humor and did it well but.
Hey, you know, as much as I am never ever 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 going to vote for that punk.
Yeah.
He does go on Jon Stewart.
Absolutely.
I will give him credit for, you know, going on a show that he knows is, you know, the audience for that are really not going to vote for him. But if listening to Jon Stewart, he has sort of defended McCain to a degree, saying, or said in the past, well, don't you feel that if any of the candidates get on, you know, that they would do a pretty good job, or they have a pretty good grasp of such and such. And you kind of know that because McCain has agreed to go on his show like 10 or 11 times or whatever, he's sort of developed an affinity for him.
He has, but, you know,
I don't think.
But my, but you know, him, but. Huckabee was on many times, and I think Huckabee's the Antichrist. But McCain, you're right. I mean, on a personal level, I would definitely like him more. Although that last time he was on, there was some buildup of him being on, and I just thought, you know, sometimes as Stewart himself alludes to, sometimes it's a very testy interview. Sometimes it's like the one, the previous one where it, they were just going at it and screaming at each other. And sometimes it's very cordial. And last one was a little bit halfway in between, but I thought it ultimately was kind of lame, especially considering, and he actually even made a joke about it, but last time it really was an opportunity to talk about Hagee, this pastor of McCain's that nobody's bringing up, and Stewart just didn't bother doing it. I agree with you. I do give him credit for going on there and being engaging, but, you know, I don't know. Politics for me, it's hard for me to get over the fact that I know who I'm voting for, and that ain't one of them. So to a certain extent, you almost get mad when somebody's engaging and you absolutely are not going to vote for them, but, you know. But anyway, yeah, he was on Saturday Night Live last night, and the big joke was, you know, they definitely emphasized, he was in two different bits, and at the very end, and they definitely emphasized his age. He kept talking about, you know, people needing to vote for a very old candidate. And he talked about one point, which was kind of funny, where he was talking about a better world for me and my children and my children's children, my great grandchildren, my great great grandchildren, and my great 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 grandchildren, and my great 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 grandchildren, who are now nearing retirement age. You know, it was kind of dumb, but you know, it was basically a series of old jokes.
Well, that's, I mean, to one degree, I understand attacking one of your weaknesses head on. On the other on the other hand, I would think if I was working for a Democratic campaign, I'd be like, oh my God, hell yeah, emphasize that. The more people realize and think about how old you are, the less likely they're going to vote for you.
They are, but you know, you can't get behind that because everybody jokes about that. So there's no, you know, I mean, it is a prominent joke. So you might as well act like you're, you know, taking the bulls by the horns on that. I mean, you really have.
I mean, that's one way to go, definitely. I don't know that that's how I'd go, but you know, I'm not in a campaign.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was, I haven't watched a single Saturday Night Live this year, but I just happened to flip from, normally I just watch TiVo, whatever records, and I end up getting stuck in that same world of the same 10 shows, and I hit live TV, and I thought, well, Saturday Night Live's on, and I turned it on, and it was Steve Carell hosting, and there was nothing especially funny about any of the shows, nothing bad, it just sort of was there. Mm-hmm. Turned it off when Usher came on, turned it back on when he came off, and, you know, so.
You know, being sick or for whatever reason, working from home for a couple of days in the past couple of weeks, depending on what I'm actually doing for work that day, I have varying degrees of attention that I can put towards other things.
Yeah.
So I usually set up my personal laptop right next to my work laptop. You know, listen to my podcast that way instead of having, you know, the iPod going. But once I'm done with those, I pulled up Hulu because I hadn't been on it in a while. And I have to say, it ended up working out really well. That's for it being an official, here's how you can watch some of our shows without stealing them
yep.
product.
Yep.
It works really well. I'm fairly impressed with it. And I ended up getting... And to a degree, it's almost too much because you end up wandering around their selection of TV and movies, and you're like, I don't really know what to watch. And, you know, you kind of have to select something that can be on the background because you are actually working.
Yeah,
and doing
so you don't get
work.
Too engaged. Yeah.
But I ended up watching that show Life from NBC last year.
Yeah, my dad loved that show. I never watched it once.
I had some friends recommend it, and I'm very particular about trying to not get into new shows.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like I watch too much TV already and I don't want to get sucked into new stuff. But the whole, you know, being able to watch it online like this actually made it much easier to watch. And they only got like 9 episodes in before the writer's strike curtailed it.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty good show. I really enjoy what they're doing there and how they're treating that character. You know, if you didn't have the main character and weren't writing him and playing him in that way, the show wouldn't really be anything. But it's all because of him. But the experience of watching on Hulu is pretty good.
Huh.
You can go full screen. The quality's not bad. I wouldn't say it's fantastic. And there are certain shows that, if that was the only place I was getting them, like Battlestar Galactica or, you know, visually exciting shows,
There
the quality's enough that I wouldn't want to watch it. But it's perfectly fine for stuff like that, or The Office or 30 Rock. You know?
My standards have gone down because I could care less. I watch it all the time on Hulu or NBC.com, and it always looks great to me because mostly I guess I've gotten used to watching it through that cruddy Slingbox quality, which is just by definition not going to be as good.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen entire series like that too. And what's interesting for me, what's cool is I'll see a series that I hadn't really thought about before, but I have the opportunity to watch the entire like first season kind of over a weekend, and you end up getting way more engaged than watching it, you know, once a week and then it's off for a week or whatever. So that's how I saw Rescue Me. That's how I saw Heroes, and some other series where I saw them kind of all back to back. And I ended up getting very engaged in a way that I'm not sure I would had I had to try to make time to find it out once a week.
Yeah. You know? I started watching the pilot for Babylon 5, which I never got into for some reason. And, you know, I hear it's a pretty good show, but so far the first 5-10 minutes of this pilot are pretty unimpressive.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to think about. It seems like these days pilots for shows are much more in line with what the show ends up being.
Yeah.
So the quality level of the writing and the sets and the, you know, the money they put into it, you know, there's much less of a difference.
Yep, absolutely.
Then, you know, I'm sure there's some examples of modern day shows where the pilot's still like almost a completely different show, you know, but if you look at Star Trek The Next Generation and the pilot for that, Encounter at Farpoint, and compare it to something, you know, mid-season, you know, mid-show or late show, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's just, oh my God, it's cover your eyes awful. But it turned into a great show. But there are other shows, and the one I usually think of is Firefly, which is kind of a cheat because there's only like 14 episodes total. But if you watch the pilot, the quality and like everything, it could easily have been, you know, placed anywhere in the series, in the show, and the quality is there that you wouldn't notice a direct ramp up from the pilot. And looking at this pilot of Babylon 5, you're like, my God, I assume it gets better, but just based on that, I mean, part of it's, you could tell it's hard to do a sci-fi show on a budget that isn't there.
I know, especially because so you're trying to do a pilot, but in reality, so much with a lot of sci-fi shows is a huge initial investment in sets and other stuff.
Yeah.
And how do you do that if you're just trying to invest in a pilot? I mean, it's a real balancing game. It must be a challenge.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting that it seems like more and more pilots are much more in line with, or they're of high enough quality that later shows are at the same level.
Well, so speaking of shows that are that we're watching online later, I for whatever reason this week decided I got in a kick. I decided, you know, I'm gonna track down and download every Top Gear episode just because I haven't seen a lot of them, and I thought, you know, I don't want to have voids in my viewing, so I you know, I found a bunch of rapid share links because, you know, the BitTorrent is just so freaking slow and unreliable. So I downloaded like the first 5 seasons, and I found myself being sucked totally into this off in the corner while I'm doing other work watching, you know, Top Gear. And it's kind of funny to watch it through the course of time. I mean, you can see today, but even back then, it really has not changed a whole lot in terms of the quality. The films that they put together are of such high quality and such a standard that it's really quite unbelievable. And that it doesn't draw attention to itself, but as you watch some of these films and the shots they do, you realize how much energy was taken into setting up a lot of this film. I mean, it's extraordinarily well done. It's kind of weird to see that first season where they have that other presenter besides James May. And it was like a sort of, and for the first two or three seasons, it was sort of a heavy emphasis on, oh, here's how you can go buy a used car cheaply, which they've kind of totally eliminated. But everything else, it hasn't changed a bit. In fact, looking at particularly Jeremy Clarkson and Richard Hammond, they literally haven't aged a bit in the past 4.5 years. Whereas James May, the first time he came on, he looked kind of young and dashing, and almost instantly his hair grew long and wild and crazy, and he looks like 30 years older. But anyway, it's still kind of cool. I've been enjoying watching all of those and just sort of hanging on to them. So 100 hours of Top Gear. So. Anyway,
it's interesting. I actually haven't seen a lot of the older ones.
Yep.
I haven't seen any of them that didn't have all three of the current hosts already in place. So that's.
Well, it's kind of cool to see where I came in on, because I finally got to, and it's season 4, which is essentially where I started becoming really aware of it. And I always remember the first time I ever saw anything Top Gear. It was this video that I saw on some website, and it had to have predated Dig, so it was some website. And it was the most amazing thing ever, and I couldn't figure out where this thing came from. It was the video where they decided to go take a Aston Martin, and Jeremy would drive to Monte Carlo, and Richard and James would take a train. So they could only go on trains, and he could only drive and see who would beat them to Monte Carlo. And it was unbelievably well produced. Now, looking at the series, it's, hey, Ruby, hang on a second. Ruby, come here. So now it's sort of par for the course, looking at the quality. But at the time, I remember thinking, oh, my God, it's so well produced, and it was weird because it was like 7 minutes long, and I remember thinking, what's this all about? Why is it 7 minutes long? Because it looks like something that should have taken up either an entire show or a much shorter segment. So it was kind of weird getting to the vibe of it. Anyway, so I finally saw it in context. The other thing which I really enjoy seeing is their stars in a reasonably priced car, because I've seen like the rankings of who won, and you know, I'd say 80% of the time I don't even know who their stars are. They're very British. But I finally saw the episode where Dame Ellen MacArthur, or whatever her name is, it's this gal. She's only like 25, and she was actually made like in Britain. There's sirs and dames, so she's not a knight, so she was made a dame, because she like soloed in a boat around the world, and Britain right. just fell in love with her. I mean, they loved her, and they actually made her in her 20s the equivalent of a knight. Well, anyway, she was the fastest ever first seven series of Stars in a Reasonably Priced Car, and I finally saw that episode. It was pretty cool. Anyway, so I've been enjoying it. I have them all. I'm putting them all on, an entire series fits on a single DVD, and I'm putting each one of them on their own little DVD, and it's kind of neat. I'll give them to you if you want to see them, if you want to have copies of them.
Apparently, the American version, Gear, did not get picked, is not part of NBC's announced fall lineup, but it's not dead. They said they're still trying to develop it.
Well, according to Carolla, he says, well, no, they're still developing it. It's going to probably be a mid-season replacement. Don't worry about it, and yada, yada, yada. I was actually extremely surprised when they were saying it was going to be on NBC. It just struck me as like a basic cable show, not a actual NBC show.
The more I think about it, the more I think it's never going to work.
That's exactly what I was thinking watching these shows.
Because it's the ability, the situation that they have at the BBC where they're not sponsored and they can say whatever they want makes the difference. And like they've done shows where they've got, they put Richard Hammond in a Nissan Micra, which they don't sell over here, but it's this really, really small car. And it's a convertible, and it was also like Hello Kitty pink.
Yeah.
And so they show him driving around with a bag over his head, And he's clearly not enjoying the car at all, and finally says, you know what, I can't do this. And he pulls the car to the side of the road and just gets out of it and leaves.
Yeah.
And that was, they basically stopped the review short, so it wasn't even a full review. The whole gag is that this car is so amazingly atrocious
that
they can't even review it.
And they got a lot of controversy because they're always putting down Vauxhall, which is, it's a British brand. It's been owned by GM for like 80 years, but it's like a British brand. And especially the Vauxhall Vectra, that they actually shut down production, and tons of people claimed, it's because Jeremy and them were constantly putting it down on Top Gear. Now, of course, that's ridiculous. I mean, if they're putting out a cruddy car, these guys are pointing it out. I wouldn't totally elaborate, put it on them. But you're exactly right. I mean, I'm watching the show going, first of all, watching the show, especially the first four or five series they have on our seasons, it's very clear that they, first of all, I was surprised. I thought it was all negativity. Actually, they really heap a lot of praise on a lot of cars. And it's not all, supercars great, basic cars bad. They find basic cars that they love. So I was surprised. I thought it was a lot more negative than it ended up being. But second of all, you're exactly right. I'm thinking, how in the world here, just in terms of sponsors, so many sponsors on NBC are car companies. How are they going to do this? And Adam Carolla was in an interview, and he said, we figured that. Basically, we figured that we're only going to review cars we like, do actual reviews. And I thought, well, that's funny, but that's kind of what makes the first show so great, that they have these opinions. So if you're just going to constantly talk about great cars, it's going to look, I honestly have no clue how they're going to do it. Just none. If they focus on stars in a reasonably priced car and a bunch of goofy competitions, I guess you could do it, but it won't be the same as Top Gear. So
yeah, and just going back to your Vauxhall thing, like they hate, or at least Clarkson really hates the Prius.
Yep.
The Prius is doing just fine, thank you very much.
Yep. And they hate diesels with a passion. Anything related to diesel. Well, diesel is 50% of the market over there. I mean, half of their viewers have diesel. So it's not like they've killed the prospects for diesel because they make fun of them. And a couple times they've gotten in trouble over in the UK for making statements about something. And then later they've like blowing stuff up and other stuff. And later the BBC has, looked into it and said, people assume this is, to some extent, satire in their opinion, and we're going to give our viewers the credit to understand the difference, and understand what's them trying to push people and what's them just trying to push buttons. And, so anyway, I it's been real fun watching the whole thing. I agree with you totally. I cannot for the life of me picture this thing being on in the U.S. I'd love to see Americans' stars compete in the stars in a reasonably priced car, though. That would be great.
That would be funny. Let's see what I guess we could move over to video games.
Sure.
So really the thing is, I've borrowed Richard's Grand Theft Auto 4.
How's that going?
Still haven't managed to put that many hours in. I'm still, I think, I haven't checked the thingy where it says what percentage you are through the game. I'm pretty sure.
Well, it'll tell you exactly how many. It'll tell you exactly how many hours you've played, too.
Well, I haven't looked at that either.
Yeah.
I think I'm still less than 10% by, I think I finally killed the first major character, so to speak.
Yeah.
I don't want to give away too much. Overall, I think it's still what we discussed last week, where I haven't really gotten to the point where it lets you go do whatever you want. Because I still have only been, I think I've only just been to one of the other islands now.
Yeah.
For the strip club. I was encouraged to go buy a gun from somewhere.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'm able to really do what I want yet in the sandbox. It hasn't really opened up completely. Every so often,
for the most part, you actually are. For the most part, if you want to go, like the sandbox is finding jumps and Praxam, you can do all of that. For the, there's some other stuff you can't, but for the most part, you're pretty set up to do that. At least
there's a one thing that's irritating, and I don't know if this is specific to the beginning or not, but you know, after you finished a mission and there's really nothing obvious that you're supposed to do next, and you kind of wander around and you're like, well, huh, I wonder. Okay, is this free time, quote unquote?
Yep.
Like, okay, so then you call the girl Michelle to try and set up a date, and she says, sure, come on over. And of course, right then your cousin calls and says, oh, you have to come get me out of some situation.
Yep.
And you're like, God dang it.
Yeah.
Why couldn't you have done that before I made this date?
I noticed that too, because I couldn't tell at the time if it was structured that way, because they're trying to allude it to be like real life where you schedule something and then something gets in the way where it's gonna force you to break the date you've made or something or what. And I couldn't tell. And nearest I could tell is no, they're just waiting a certain amount of time and you just got bored a little earlier than they anticipated or something. But I agree too. That would frustrate you, 'cause you'll see in the meters that there's meters of how much somebody likes you. And if you break dates, they'll stop liking you. You know, so right. you have to like make a plan to do something, fulfill that plan, and then leave. You know, so.
Well, it is kind of frustrating when it does that. You're like, I just started doing something, and now you're getting in my way.
Yeah.
Just to get back to general, you know, so far the game's going okay. I did get myself kind of nauseous, and I don't know if it's because I was still getting over this cold or what. But between driving and the way the camera works, it did make me sick, and I couldn't pick up the game for a couple days because of that.
Jesus.
Just thinking about picking it up, I was like, oh, queasy.
It's got a problem with it. For the most part, it worked pretty well for me, but the camera for driving, it's too low. You want to see more ahead of yourself. See, if I find myself when I'm driving, especially when I'm going on a big, long drive really fast where there might be cars ahead of me, I find myself constantly using the right button to pull that camera up so I can see more ahead. So somebody's watching me play, they're getting sick because they're constantly, I'm bouncing up and down because you can't just hold it up high. You have to kind of tap the button to keep it up at a certain level, but the cameras, for the most part, work pretty well. If you're doing any close combat inside a building, it's terrible because it's swinging you around and it's not really well set up in those environments. I didn't get sick. I can imagine if I had a cold and had a tiny bit of vertigo issues getting sick, but didn't happen to me.
The other irritating thing is that it's such a pain in the butt to save right now.
It won't get any easier.
Well, that's poor design. I can't understand why.
Well, here's the important thing. It will save after you've completed a mission. There is an auto save, so you've saved that. So you kill the guy, and then the minute you get that little bit of you'll get a little this tiny little cut music, this da-na-na-na-na, whatever thing, it's actually saved. So you're going to be fine if you turn the computer off. You don't have to play that mission again. But the simple fact is yeah, you have to go back to you have to go back to one of your pads. Now, as you get into the game and you realize you can call cabs and it'll take you instantly there, it's much, much better. Have you called a cab yet, and have you hailed any cabs or whatever?
Yeah, I've done that a little bit, but because most of the stuff has been in a small area, I haven't bothered.
Well, once you get into the game, that becomes your most important asset. I didn't do it at all in the beginning, and towards the end, that's all you're doing is looking around. Where's a cab? Where's a cab? Where's a cab? Because you just want to get out there. Now, think about that, and then think about Grand Theft Auto 3 San Andreas, where cabs could take you nowhere. There was no cabs, and there was sometimes you'd have to literally drive 15 minutes to get to your mission. So imagine starting a mission and having to drive 15 minutes to get to that mission. So thank God for the cab thing, but I agree. And that's what ticked me off about those achievements is, you know, you were saying, well, why don't you just press that center button and go, well, if you press the center button, you log off, you know, you have to log off Grand Theft Auto, and it takes a minute to log back on. Well, on mine you did. You do it, and it says, do you want to save your changes? Well, you don't have to log off, but you don't save your changes. You can't do it in mid-mission. So
you should just be able to press start and then, you know, do
no, no, not start. No, that's to look at the in-game missions. I'm talking about...
I understand, but if you pause the game that way and then press the center button, it gives you the quasi-gamer score stuff.
Oh, I didn't realize you could... Well, I knew you could press start, which pauses the game. I didn't realize you could press start, pause the game, and then press the Xbox button. I thought that logged off.
You can do a certain amount of things in through that menu that it brings up.
But we're just talking about achievements. I want to see achievements.
Yeah, and that's when you get one, you know as long as that announcement is on the screen, if you press the button, it will instantly bring up your gamer card and show it to you.
Oh, so. But that's what I'm talking about. At any time, you can't. You have to wait till you.
Well, it's. The way they've set up those notifications, any notification like that, whenever it pops up on the screen, whether it's you got an achievement or your friend logged in, as long as that's on screen, if you press the center button, it brings that up in the menu. It's context sensitive.
Yeah.
Now, if you do it when there isn't anything on screen, which
is 90% of the time I want to do it, or I just want to see where I'm at, you have to log off, right?
No. Well, what you have to do... Without being able to do it in front of me, I'm a little fuzzy on exactly what you can do, but you do need to pause the game.
Okay.
Because the game will run under it.
Yep.
So if you pause the game and then press that center button, it brings out your gamer tag.
Yep.
And you should be able to look up your achievements from there without leaving the game.
Okay.
But
you need
to pause the game first.
I wasn't aware of that. If it can do that, then that's like a huge part of my complaint against it.
Yes, it should be able to.
Yeah.
And that's true on any Xbox game, not just GTA.
Yeah, because a lot of games, they make it part of their own in-game system, so that's what I guess I had been used to. So
I gotcha. But, like, overall, I'm still enjoying it. You know, my oft-stated thing of beating up hookers hasn't come into play yet.
I never saw a hooker in the entire game that I can remember.
And
let me know when you find a hooker. Tell me what you can do with them.
What will do. You know, it's still interesting, and I still like it, and, you know, I'll continue to report in. I don't feel that I've missed anything by having not played any of the other Grand Theft Autos.
Yeah.
Which is good, because that is good game design when you don't feel like you're lost, you don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, they didn't put a whole lot of references to the old games either. It's pretty interesting in that.
Well,
a lot of games,
they
feel compelled to just load it up with old references, and there's extremely few references.
It's not only that, but it's also just the familiarity of knowing how to move around and what to do. Like, you pick up Halo 3, and you don't need to read the manual. You know how to shoot someone.
Yeah.
This game does a pretty good job, if you've never played the previous ones, of how to logistically handle the game.
Yeah. It's actually relatively complex in a lot of ways, but yeah, it's one of the more organic ways of figuring out where you don't have to feel like, oh, they're leading me through a total, here's how to play the game mission. It's like Rainbow Six, where all of a sudden you're playing in Mexico, and it's very obvious they're training you on how to play this game.
Yeah, I usually don't mind those that much, but
I just don't mind them when they're overtly obvious, and for whatever reason, it felt a lot more organic in Grand Theft Auto 4. But still looking at it, I mean, especially at the retrospect, I liked it. It was really great, but I still am, you know how we were saying there's like that perfect storm of criticism or praise, and for whatever reason, Speed Racer encountered that perfect storm of everybody was going to hate this movie, and Grand Theft Auto reached that weird perfect storm. Maybe they set it up this way, but everybody was going to love this game, and I really liked it a lot, But boy, I mean, I'm thinking in terms of pure game and everything else. I mean, it's not even close to, for instance, BioShock, which was as bad a perfect a game as you can imagine, even though it's a totally different game. So I'm not quite sure why I realized why it was so rapturously received. I could see somebody giving it a mezzo review and having real legitimate reasons for doing that. But I never saw those reviews at all.
I was just thinking of something. I know. It was, I went to that comic book show last weekend.
The what? Oh, yeah, how'd that go?
Convention.
Is it an officially like a Comic-Con, or is that like a brand somebody owns, or?
Well, if you say Comic-Con,
they think of San Diego.
Immediately assume San Diego, if that's all you say.
But I noticed that the New York one was referred to as Comic-Con.
Yes. I don't know if it's a trademark name, because you're right, and I don't think New York is at all run by the same people that do San Diego.
Yeah.
The people that do San Diego run two others. There's one in WonderCon in San Francisco and the Alternative Press Expo.
Yeah.
Those are all run by the same group. So
what's WonderCon? Like fantasy or?
No, it's just a comic. It's the exact same thing. It's just smaller scale.
Yeah.
It was okay. I mean, Seattle's still a relatively small market, so it's consistently getting bigger.
Yeah.
Any
big names there? Was there any big artists or movie or anything like that there?
Just comic book people. There were a few for media names. I think the biggest they had was a Jamie Bamber, who plays Apollo on Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
And it's always kind of awkward because there's the way you can have big names like that varies situation to situation. His situation was he was pretty much just there to sign autographs, but it was a charging for autographs thing.
Like a Star Trek convention.
Well, when I've been to Star Trek conventions, they haven't. But that was a long time ago. I haven't been to a Star Trek convention in
maybe like a baseball card show.
Yeah.
Ted Williams did do it late in life, but, you know, somebody there, and depending who they are, it might be $100 an autograph, it might be $10. It's a weird thing. I'm going to stand in line to pay money for an autograph.
Yeah, I mean, some people are into that. They're collecting them, and it's worth it. And if it's, you know what, if it's someone that's your hero that you're probably never going to see again, I can see it.
But for someone like I can too, but I'll tell you, if it's my hero, I feel kind of weird paying my hero money for his autograph. That would be bizarre, but, you know, I agree. I mean, the fact is people are into it, and then the fact is these other people, why shouldn't they, you know, make some money off it, especially because a lot of them, that will end up defining their career a lot. Why not make a little money off of it? And often the deal is the presenters of the shows, that's the deal. We're not going to pay you much, but you can make money to be here. As opposed to, they say, well, I'll sign autographs for free, but you got to pay me a certain amount to be there. And the presenters often don't have the money to do that. So it ends up being like a weird little quid pro quo.
Yeah, anyway, the show itself was okay. We only stayed a couple hours.
Uh-huh.
But I did go by the Penny Arcade booth and talk to Tycho for a little bit about the...
Oh, he was at the booth?
Yes.
Did they have people clamoring around them, or were they aware of it in the comic community?
It's really funny, because they also have a booth at San Diego. The San Diego booth had a little more activity, but this one, a couple people were there, but not much.
Are comic people into that, or is it more of a computer nerd phenomenon?
There's some crossover, but I do always think it's funny that, like, these two guys are, you know, they've got a booth there, and some people know who they are, but they're, for the most part, left
alone.
They're
giants.
Whereas they basically run what is the biggest video game expo in the
country. Now that E3's gone, they're the biggest in the world.
And wow. they would not be able to walk around that show without being mobbed and having, you know, people follow them everywhere and just be worshipped, basically.
That must be weird being that situational superstar, you know, depending on where you are. It's sort of like those British pop singers that say, oh, I love to come to America because nobody even knows who I am, you know.
Exactly. anyway, I talked to Tycho a little bit about the upcoming video game that they have that releases this week.
Yeah, I've been reading some people who've been playing it or listening to them, and they like it. They say it's really fun and funny. So, is it just a PC game?
No.
Or is it a like an Xbox thing?
That's one of the things about it, is that it's basically coming out for every single platform.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, I don't think it's coming out for DS. And I actually don't know if there's a PlayStation version, but there's an Xbox Live version, and there's a you can get a Mac version, a Linux version, and a PC version.
Is there a is there, like, for Xbox Live, can I download? I haven't re-upped my Xbox Live membership, the gold thing, because I'm basically waiting to get invited to Microsoft playtesting again and just get it for free. So I haven't re-upped that. And can you download or buy content without having an Xbox Live gold subscription? I'm assuming you can.
I think so, but I honestly don't know.
How much is it going to cost?
$20.
Oh, that seems reasonable.
Anyway, I was asking him, I said, okay, I have a Mac and I have Xbox 360, which, you know, from your perspective, which version does the game lend itself to being more fun on, one of those versions? And he said, really, because what they were trying to do in terms of the homage of the platform, the 360 version is more what they want the experience to be. You know, sort of this homage to RPG, old RPG games.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, okay, cool. And he said, you know, granted...
You're talking about old RPG games in the sense of visual or in the sense of the old, almost it's all dialogue kind of, you know?
I don't really know. I didn't follow that question up.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, that being said, we make less money on the 360 version. anyway, it was really interesting. And of course, as I was talking to him, a little fleck of saliva kind of arced onto his arm. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. And I really should have extended my apology, because then he kind of looked at his arm for a minute and then looked at me, and I was still going. And I was like, I was thinking about it later, and I was thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be in the strip on Monday about the guy that spit on him. Oh my God.
Oh, that's horrible.
So,
that's funny. Yuck.
I was not in the strip, fortunately. but it's it's interesting to talk to those guys, and it's interesting to see what's going to happen with this game. Because they in their podcasts and whatnot, they've been very open about we could easily get savaged, because our job of what we do is making fun of the industry, and now we're much more a part of the industry.
But I'll tell you, they've done everything they can to diffuse that by preemptively talking about, well, we're going to be savage. We could be savage. So to an extent, they've undercut that.
Completely.
I think.
And they've said, that they would not do this again, because the amount of work was just staggering, that they just had not been anticipating. And to some degree, it's self-imposed, because I was listening to Tycho talk about, I guess, kind of, what do you say, there are 14 crabs in the game. And his description, or whatever he did text-wise for writing about the crabs, was unique for every single crab.
Hmm.
And that was his choice to do that. He could easily have come up with one for the crabs, and that's it. So it's definitely a self-imposed level of quality that they're trying to reach, which... It speaks well to their work ethic and the fact that, we're putting our name on this thing, and if it's going to stink, fine, but it's not because we didn't bring our A game.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to play next week. Although, now it's, I'm borrowing two games from you at once, and then this game will come out, so it'll be interesting to see how those all fit together when I have time to play something. Well, I'm not sure if I have anything else to ramble on about.
Well, there's a couple things coming up. Recount comes up, what is it, next week, I think, or this week, which I'm looking forward to. That's the HBO thing about the election from 2000. And that's been in the news because apparently Warren Christopher comes across horribly in this movie, and everybody's talking about that. I'm looking for that. And then also there's... There's kind of a little mini-series remake of The Andromeda Strain, which I love that book, and I love the movie. It was like Michael Crichton's first big book, and he also became he directed the movie, if I remember right, and it was a really cool movie because it was done in a very there was no real stars, and it was done in a very matter-of-fact way. So hopefully they won't totally, oh, we have stars and do melodrama. They'll just do it as matter-of-fact as the first one. So I like that, but I'm thinking about watching that. It's on A&E, I think, this week. So looking forward to that. Can't think of anything else coming up. Not sure what else is coming up, other than Indy 4, which is next week. Boy, if I read one more article where they're talking about that stupid New York Times article, everybody's picked up on that, and that's become the big internet meme that, oh, that, you know, this movie might be in trouble, and it might have, and the internet knives are out for it and everything else. And you look at that article, and it's got, like, one or two, you know, anonymous people from Ain't It Cool News that saw the movie. I saw another article today where they were talking about, oh, it looks like there may be trouble for this movie. I'm thinking, how can you say that? It's bizarre.
You know? Well, I was just flipping through Hollywood Elsewhere, and Jeffrey says that there's no Da Vinci Code horsewhipping going on.
Oh, has he seen it yet? Because it's supposed to be right now. It's like the screening was like today, and he was talking about it.
He's saying that apparently the critical reaction was good enough.
Yeah.
I haven't read his complete article because I'm talking with you, but just in skimming it,
I
really
see that
looks
right
like
here.
It's good enough, and that, you know, as opposed to when the Da Vinci Code screened at Cannes and everybody just hated it.
Yeah.
And Wells had said before, you know, even if that happens this time, that's not the point. The point of this thing being at Cannes is just to give it more European exposure.
Well, of course, and so was the Da Vinci Code. They weren't looking to, and it made no difference. Da Vinci Code made buckets of money. It made like $600 million. This movie here, the minute it makes over $400 million worldwide, that's when Spielberg, Lucas, and Ford all cash in. They literally, it was something crazy. They get like very little, no money going into it, but after it makes $400 million, they equally split 80% of the whatever money comes back, whatever profits. So if it makes $500 million, they're each making $25 million. If it makes $600 million, they're making $30 million, they're each making $60 million. So they could make a mint of money. That says I've never really totally understood how those numbers and figures work because, you know, the way, it's my understanding, the way movies work is like the opening weekend, typically the movie company takes in 90% of the money and the movie theater takes in like 10% of the money. But towards the end of the run, that situation is reversed, it was my understanding, where a movie theater might take in like 70-80% of the money, and the movie theater only takes in a little bit of money. It's one of the ways like those movie theaters like the Crest can charge $3 a movie, because they get to keep almost all of that money, whereas in the initial run, they get to keep very little of it. So if that's the case, I don't understand, you know, we always talk about a movie being like a $400 million movie, but in reality, how much of that money is going to the movie company? I've never quite understood that. All I know is they're going to make a money. This movie is critic proof. It might underperform, but even underperforming, it's still going to make $500 million worldwide.
Agreed. Yep. I've got nothing else.
Yeah.
I would say let's wrap it up.
Okay, dude.
You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com. That's how you contact us. We will be back.
Same bat time, same bat place.
Actually,
same bat channel.
We might have to shift around.
Oh, what's going on next week?
That's Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, that's right.
So I'm going to spend at least a portion of it up at a friend's house on Big Lake, but not the whole weekend. So we'll do something.
Yeah.
All right. So my name's Matt.
I'm Richard.
Thank you very much for listening.